Track 9, Hurdling Roadblocks to Leaving. In the last track, we discussed the survival tools of recognizing signals of escalating danger, avoiding him if signals occur, de-escalating the situation, and escaping the situation. Many battered women may need to protect themselves from further harm while they are in the deciding to leave stage. In this track, we will take a look at the factors that encourage battered women to postpone their decision to leave their abusive situation. However, as you know, leaving may not always be in the battered women's best interest. Statistics from the Women's Advocacy Program indicate that a battered woman's attempt to leave her abuser increases her chances of being killed by her abuser by 75%. With this in mind, have you found, like I, that there can be three main roadblocks that postpone a battered woman's decision to leave her battering husband or partner when safety is not an immediate concern? Let's look at these. Roadblock number one is dangerous self-delusions. Self-delusions are often a large part of postponing decisions for battered women. Here's what I mean. Tanya, a 37-year-old mother of four, had been with her husband Joel through 8 years of abuse. Tanya stated, "The first time Joel hit me in the face, I thought, this is it. No man will ever hit me. But then I thought about the kids and all the bills and figured it would be better to wait until the kids were grown up and out of the house before I left. I mean, I don't want them to be one of those kids with split parents. So I'll just have to stay with him for now." Tanya was in this fantasy world thinking that she would leave Joel when she really knew she never would. Thus, she was creating a dangerous self-delusion. After several sessions, Tanya felt a more realistic statement was, "I'll stay with him as long as he goes to counseling or to AA meetings." Would it be appropriate for your Tanya with a dangerous self-delusion to be presented with the idea of developing a specific goal statement in your next session? Roadblock number two is fear. As is true with most battered women, fear is another reason many battered women will postpone their decision to leave. As you know, some batterers cannot let go and will stalk their victims using any means possible to track her down. Dana, a 51-year-old paralegal, stated, "My husband Jeremy is an attorney and counselor for divorce law. He takes pictures of battered clients and shows them to me saying, 'If you ever try to leave me, you'll end up worse than the bitch in this picture.'" Since Jeremy was part of the legal system, Dana's roadblock to leaving was not only physical fear, but fear of a corrupt legal system and lack of support for a restraining order or lack of support from the police department. In a previous track, we discussed the prejudice against a domestic violence victim that had mental or physical handicaps. Roadblock number three is low financial stability. In addition to self-delusions and fear, a third roadblock to hurdle before Dana left was the loss of financial stability. Statistics indicate that 50% of the homeless women and children in the U.S. are fleeing abuse. Dana created a certain level of financial stability for herself by not informing Jeremy of a raise she had received, as well as any time she wrote a check for groceries, writing it for more than the amount and getting the remainder in cash. Initially, she stored this money in a tampon box. Later, she put it in a separate bank account and was surprised to discover her husband, Jeremy, had lied to her about her inability to open a separate checking account. The book Lawyer's Manual on Domestic Violence, Representing the Victim, provides a list of 8 forms of evidence that battered clients can use. As I read these, think of your Tanya or Dana and see if suggesting any of these 7 basic forms of evidence would be appropriate for you in the next session with her to support her choice to stay or to leave. Number 1, photographs of the injuries. Do you need to suggest to your client to take photos? not just the day of the incident, but days later, after more bruises and swelling appear to show the extent of the injury. Number 2, 911 call record. Do you need to remind your battered client that his or her calls to 911 are recorded and could facilitate evidence in the court? Number 3, medical records. Does your client need to be informed that his or her medical records can determine whether the abuse is a misdemeanor or a felony? Number 4, statements. Well-documented interviews or a victim's statement in a police report provide evidence of violence, threats, or chicanery. I told Dana that Jeremy's note begging for forgiveness attached to flowers can be used as chicanery. 5. Criminal records. Do you need to inform your client that even though their batterer's previous crimes cannot be admitted as evidence, they can show motive and intent? 6. Crime scene photos. Do you need to remind your client that evidence recorded by the police, such as blood stains or broken furniture, can be submitted as proof of the incident? And number 7, taps and tapes. Would it be appropriate to suggest to your client to videotape stalking for evidence and to make a backup recording of answering machine messages? Would it be beneficial to replay this track to review the 7 forms of evidence of photos, 911 records, medical records, statements, criminal records, criminal scene photos, and videotaping prior to your next session, whether your client is considering leaving or not? Truly, many battering victims, whether male or female, are addicted to love. And on the next track, we will discuss this cycle of addictive love that prevents your battered client from leaving and how information about nurturing love can help. Question number 9. What are 3 roadblocks to be hurdled before many leave?